Can you speak, please?
Good morning. It's Arun Mohammed, Department of Basic Education.
Tamba Bojana, Department of Basic Education.
Tovela, ke ma go pema phila modulasetulo wa seis gae ke tloka Limpopo.
Hi, I'm Matsidi Sodipolo. I'm the Chief of Regional Office for SAIS.
Morning, it's Reg Bridgeraj, CEO for SAIS. Good morning, everybody, again.
Morning, Elam Khalani from SAIS.
Thank you, members, and everybody is here. Is there any apology?
Sorry, Honorable Chair.
Before that, Honorable...
Honorable Chair, I would just like for clarity, the gentleman across the room from me, I unfortunately don't understand the language. Is it possible that someone can just read... do a translation to me? I would really like to know the gentleman and where he's from. I have no idea. Please, Majesty. If there's someone that can translate to me in English, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Faba, but as you are aware that we've got 11 official languages.
No, no.
Yeah, but this mm-hmm. has not
if
been...
If someone here can just translate,
yeah.
I have no idea where the gentleman is from.
Just ask Honorable Blackie there, he'll do it quietly. So, just do that.
I'll be much obliged. Thank you.
Yeah, and do it quietly.
He's the chair of faith, not from the book.
Please, I'm going to request members.
Madam Chair, yes, but I will also not be intimidated. I want to make it goddamnly clear that it's also my right to understand something.
Honorable Father, I'm saying I'm going to allow the member to do that, but you must do it quietly and respect this meeting.
That's respecting your rights.
Please. Do it and do it quietly. Members, you are allowed to speak in any language.
Yes.
And I'm going to request members, for those who need interpretation, do it and do it quietly and with respect.
Yes.
Please.
That's on a point of order. So you can understand fully what you said. Mm. It is not your problem and it is not our problem. But it is a problem from the NCOP and Parliament to supply us or to provide translation in the if we have a problem here.
This is why I'm saying we don't have the necessary equipment. I request members if there's any translation. The next member will assist the other member, but we should do that quietly so that we don't interrupt this meeting. Thanks. Are there any apologies?
We've got three apologies. Honorable Zulu, Honorable Moroto, and Honorable Moshodi.
Thank you, Committee Secretary. Honorable members, I'm going to give this opportunity to say to give us a briefing. Anyone who is here to lead the briefing.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members of the Select Committee. I must start off by saying it is a great honor and privilege for us to be here to give you an idea of what we are going to undertake in the coming year and also to get advice from you and give you as much clarity as you require the role that the provinces play in the provincial departments play in developing our teachers is extremely important, and during the course of this presentation we shall highlight aspects where honorable members would be able to assist us further regarding our work in the province. Chairperson, in this presentation I will make some introductory comments for about 5 minutes or so, after which the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Morris Mapindani, who is right on my left, he came in as we finished the introductions, he will talk about our finances in terms of the MTEF projections. Then Ms. DiPolo, who is the Chief Operating Officer, will take us through the main mandates of SAIS, which is registration and ethical standards. We have Ella Mokolani on my left. She is, her official title is Senior Manager, but I think she has the most difficult task in SAIS because she manages policy, planning, research, and teacher development. So we've made sure Ella comes so that she can give us details. And we are fortunate to be accompanied by our chairperson, Mr. Mapila, on Mr. Polo's right, and he will interact with us in the question and answer session, and also use that opportunity to make some comments on behalf of council. The four of us are SAIS employees. I have a dual role in that I am also a councillor. Mr. Mapila is the chairperson of council, chairperson of the executive committee. Then we are fortunate also to have DBE officials with us, because the DBE is also, the minister is represented in SAIS, so we would be able to assist with some explanation. Chairperson, I think most members know that SAIS is a 30-member council, and they are officially appointed by the Minister for Basic Education. And of these 30 members, 18 comes from the teacher unions, and the other 12 come from different stakeholder groupings, like independent schools, school governing bodies, and so on. So we have got, and the minister, of course, has got 5 reps in this council. So it's a fairly representative council of stakeholders. The council, as everybody most probably know, does 3 things in the main. One is that it ensures that everybody who wishes to teach is registered with SAIS in terms of the requirements of SAIS, so that they have a certificate which licenses them to teach. Without that, it's actually unlawful for teachers to be teaching in schools, whether the governing body posts or independent schools. And it is a matter that Mr. Polo will talk about later, where we can plead with the provinces to assist us a little further there. The other second mandate is professional development. And this is one that SAIS is taking more and more seriously over the years. It didn't do so much in the past, but now we are applying our minds. The council is very, very vigilant in terms of professional development, as a result of which it has reorganized its staffing to place Ms. Mogalani in a position that will be able to concentrate a lot more on the professional development of teachers. What professional development is, how we are going to do it, and where the provinces are going to be playing a role is what Ms. Mokolani will assist us with just now. Then, of course, the third function is the code of ethics, where we have to structure a code of ethics, review it, and implement it to make sure teachers are all professionals and they do abide by the code of ethics. And there again, Ms. DiPolo will ask members to assist us, because sometimes we get communication challenges in terms of dealing with cases. Of course, now we also are involved in research, because the council feels that we must have a fully fledged research division, which we are having now almost, and so that we could advise the minister in terms of issues pertaining to professionalism of teachers. So, Chair, that is roughly the role of SAIS, which I think most of you know. In terms of the funding of SAIS, teachers pay 10 rands a month as we speak, and that gives us our budget for the year, which comes to about 50 million, and the CFO will give you details in terms of the funding. And in this regard, I must say that we have been very fortunate, Chair, over the years, and it may be appropriate for me to acknowledge that in this select committee, the Department of Basic Education, previously the Department of Education, have been very, very helpful to us in that in our early days they provided us with accommodation free of charge. Then they facilitated our accommodation again free of charge in the ELRC. So we have been fortunate in our growing years to have had the support of the Department of Education financially and with resources. In the early days, we hardly had much levies. We started off with 152 rand. So much so that with the goodwill shown by these entities, today SAIS has its own building, which the CFO will tell you about, that we intend paying for by the end of the year. It's a lovely building in Lenchen Street in Pretoria, opposite the Dross Restaurant. And if any of the honorable members are in that area, it will be our pleasure to invite you to visit us. It's your building as well. Belongs to the teachers, belongs to the select committee.
That's you.
So, yes, sorry?
That's you.
Centurion.
Okay.
Centurion. Uplension. Yeah, so that is the funding situation. In our report, there is an update that has to be made. At the time when we were preparing the report, it wasn't there. But now we have also the guarantee that the department's contribution to our coffers, which they do on a voluntary basis every year, they give us about 7 million rands every year, specially dedicated for continuing professional development, because it has been agreed that this is an additional role that SAIS is playing, and we need for the department to facilitate funding, which they have been doing for the past number of years. The report will show you that we are still awaiting that money, but we have guarantees that the money is now sorted out, so that would not be a problem. Chair, before I conclude this introduction, I must talk about the partnerships that we enjoy. One is with the Department of Basic Education. They serve with us also in what is called a task team, which looks into the nitty-gritties of teacher development. So we work in a complementary way with the Department of Education to implement the teacher development framework. Also, in terms of other issues pertaining to professional teachers, we have this kind of mutual interest, which makes us work together, and very often we meet with the department bilaterally to discuss matters that affect teachers and education generally. So I must declare to the select committee that we have a thriving relationship. As the department official Harun always reminds us, it's also a robust relationship, because it's not every time a smooth meeting to discuss issues because of the nature of education. Sometimes our meetings are quite energetic. Then, Chair, we have a relationship with all the teacher unions and the other stakeholder groupings, and in council, all unions are treated equally. The numbers game do not apply in council. We've never had a situation in the many years that I have served as CEO where you find unions pitted against each other. That is not the dynamic that it pertains in SAIS. I suppose the issue of professionalism unites all of the unions very easily. So we don't quite know sometimes in council which member is from which union. And quite honestly, it really is not a significant matter there. We find that very often they are together. So also with the independent schools, we have a relationship. We have regular bilaterals with them. We have regular bilaterals with the unions. And we are open to be meeting with any entity or organization that has the welfare of teachers and welfare of learners at heart and education. So I just thought I'll mention that to the committee in terms of our relationships. Our relationships with the provinces, the provincial departments chair, I think may be of more interest to the committee, is growing. It's growing, and that is an area that my colleagues will give us specifics in terms of how we could grow more, because I think select committee members need to know some details that may not have come your way. Because of bureaucracy, sometimes you find information doesn't come up to the high level that you hold. They will give you some details in terms of specifics. In concluding, Chair, I must admit that SAIS has been doing satisfactory work over the many years in the four areas that I have pointed out. I will not classify, as a previous school teacher, the work in the category good yet, if I was very objective, but definitely satisfactory. We would give SAIS a pass mark. And there are many reasons as to why we have not been really excelling. You know, we've got constraints of many kinds. One of the biggest constraints over the past few years has been accommodation. We have been moving from pillar to post, and that held us back, and then we have to save. This council is very strict with money, and they instructed us to save and save and buy our own building so that we get rid of that one challenge. But I can assure the select committee that in the year ahead and in the years ahead, we are now having sufficient funding, once we pay off for the building, to do good work. The department has also assured us that they will make sure that stream of funding that comes will come through to us. So, Chair, that is just by way of introduction, and I will then now give over to Mr. Mapindani. And I'm hoping, Chair, if it's okay with yourself, that we go through the presentation and then maybe take questions at the end of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me just indicate that I think you have taken about 10 minutes from the time of presentation. From now, it will be a presentation. It's 25 past 10. Your president should be able to do that with your presentation till 10 past.
Sure.
Of the whole presentation.
Sure.
Everybody must present.
I'll watch.
Thank you.
Thank
you, Chair. The next slide after the introductory slide, I think the one, two, the third one, will talk of the MTEF projections. I would like to indicate that those projections will change just now. We are beginning the process. The council has not adjudicated on the changes. The changes are caused by, we have received a commitment from the Department of Education of 7.3 million for the professional development, including the amount we did not spend in the previous financial year, 2012-13, which amounts to 15 million, which means under professional development there will be an additional amount of 15 million.
Sorry, Madam Chair, if I can just get MTEF, is that medium term? I just be, you know, with medium term, and the EF stands for?
Expenditure Framework.
Okay, thank you so much. I just wanted to know that I'm not
off track. Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, thanks. So,
Thank you. Members, I'm going to request that any question that you need, allow the presenters to present, note any question, any clarification,
okay.
So that after the presentation, then you can ask questions. Proceed.
The other change will come on the entire operation because there is a change in the sense that we had a building which we were selling for the past 3 years, and it's only now that the council managed to get a buyer of that building, which is 10.5 million proceeds, which is coming in. We have to adjust the budget same time so that we accommodate that revenue. So that's a change which will come. Could not factor it in here because the council has been adjudicated on that and wants to present it to you now. It will be a public document before the council work through it. Let me indicate that in terms of our revenue, we get membership fees, which will amount to 51 million from our members who are educators. And again, we receive the subsidy from Department of Education, of which there's a statement on the next slide which I need to correct, which says that there's no guarantee up to today. We do have guarantees from the department. The minister signed a letter to indicate that they will give us 7.3 on submission of our adjusted budget, which shows that we're going to get the money. So the adjustment budget which the council will adjudicate on the coming 2 weeks will include that 7.3 plus 7.7 that we do have in our unused funds for the previous financial year. In addition to that, we do generate interest, which for now it's growing a little bit because of the building reserve fund that we do have. So our total revenue for the year 2013-14 will amount to 55 million. Before adjustment, so the adjustment we'll talk about it when it arrives. So in terms of the expenditure, we have an increase on rental because currently where we are renting a building to buy it as soon as our building reserve fund adds up. So in terms of our projection, by the end of this financial year, would have been able to accumulate the amount required to purchase the building. So that result will only increase for this year, but in the coming years, it will fall off because we would have bought the building. Although the contract, the rental runs up to 2016, but should we make it in as soon as possible. It will be to our advantage not to pay money into rental, but to buy the building, and we own the building. So we are not following that rental contract. The council has yet itself to be able to pay it off as soon as possible, of which our projection is the end of this financial year. In this budget, you see there's a decrease in mandatory functions because we are funding the rental of the new building, which we occupied July last year, from the amount which was supposed to be funding the operation. So our operation got affected a bit. But with the adjusted budget, it will be relieved because the 10.5 million, when we get it for the sale of the building, will give us a chance, will add up to the purchase price of the building. We have it. Then we'll have 3 months, January, February, March, which will give us 3 million from our membership fee, which we are reserving for the building. So the 3 million will come back and boost our operation. The 2 rand 60 per educator out of the 10 rand contribution by educators, it's reserved towards the building with effect from July 2010. So currently as we are talking, our building reserve fund is sitting at 40 million. Up to February it was 40 million, but now as I'm speaking, it's at 43 million, which shows that we are not far from reaching our target. I've indicated that we have just sold the building in Fisasi Street for 10.5.
Mm-hmm.
And once we finish the building, where all our revenue, which was funding the rental, will come back to fund the operation, being the management of cases, professional development, as well as our registration. In summary, I have explained.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Sir. I'll just talk to registration and ethics, and just basically to say one of our the three mandates that we have is registration, and our main purpose is to ensure that we register all educators to satisfy registration requirements. We register from ECD right up to SET colleges currently, and we have moved to say that we have two databases that we're opening. We have what we call full registration status, that is educators who qualify with the full qualification registration. Then the second lot of database that we have is the provisional registered educators. Those educators, some of them are students who are studying. We give them the temporary education which they come in on an annual basis. Then we also have the foreign educators who are coming to the country. We give them registration. We ensure that they are registered when they are in the country. And most of them are given foreign normal, foreign conditional, because we don't give full registration.
Can you use the other mic?
I think. Then when it comes to other registration, we also have what we call conditional registration. This is to educators who are not having a teaching qualification but having academic qualification, and they are teaching in your independent schools, your private schools, and your all other schools. Because we ensure that we keep a register of every educator that's sitting in front of our learners, we ensure that we give them conditional registration. What we then do with conditional registration is that we look at what they are teaching, and we get the school and the SGP to sign that they are being employed, and the reason for them being employed despite not qualifying, the fact that they can't find the educator who is suitably qualified for that particular position. So we give them a conditional registration attaching them to the particular schools and ensuring that they're coming back to the council to renew on an annual basis so that we can keep up with the information that that they are teaching. And that's what we then do with registration. We've been having some frustrations in the past because currently we're working on getting educators to register online, but now they are registering through the post. It's been a slow process. But I think in the 2 years that I've been with council, we've been able to increase that to the extent that this year we're looking at registering 28,000 new entrants into the system. Now, when we say new, some of them already have been teaching in the schools but have not been registered. But now, because the issue of being registered is being sent by departments as a key thing, teachers are coming out to register. That basically is around registration, and then you have those that are coming in on a yearly basis. When we say 20,000 updated documents, we mean those that are coming on an annual basis to renew their registration status. That's basically what we're doing with the registration. It's around all provinces. When it comes to the second one, is then the professional code of ethics. We're dealing with three main areas in ethics that we... The three main areas in ethics that we look at and we've taken as key. One is the professional understanding, how educators behave, human relations in the school, that we take consideration to. We're also looking at the issue of corporal punishment, because it's on the rise again. And the third one is sexual cases that we give priority to. We're dealing with other cases, but these three we have taken a stage and taken up. We're busy with MOUs with the different provinces to say provinces deal with the other cases that are coming up that educators are dealing, but these three that stays be given so that we can prioritize and ride with them. Last year we had about 600 cases, out of those about 300 of them were sexual cases, and this year we're looking at dealing with about 650 cases. But what we've picked up is that we want to emphasize on advocacy, especially inclusive of learners, because currently, we've just been talking to educators, telling them about the codes and what the do's and don'ts are. But we've also realized that we need to speak to the learners and make them understand their right of reporting and the right of not being intimidated when we're dealing with the particular cases. So these are the areas that we're looking at. But we've also now also embarked on talking to the parents to allow the parents, because what we've identified in certain provinces is that when you go and deal with cases, you find that parents are allowing themselves to be bribed by the perpetrators, and therefore, by the time you get in to deal with a particular case, you can't because they've been paid. I think the one is in Limpopo where we got the news on a Friday, we were there on a Monday, but the educators were a step ahead of us. They were there by Sunday, promised them 20,000 rand, and the parents refused to participate in the case. A week later, the 20,000 has not been paid, and they came back to open the case again. So sometimes it delays our cases in doing progress with the cases and finalizing them, because you're meeting those challenges. But we're sitting with the different stakeholders in different provinces to try and say, how do we ensure that parents understand that despite the fact that they would be paying for damages, but you still need to ensure that, because this is a teacher-learner relationship that we're not agreeing on. So those are the areas that we're looking at. And then with the help of those MOUs, we have one in KwaZulu-Natal, because that's where we started. We're beginning now to sign one with the Eastern Cape as well to look at the different cases and how do we help. And how do we get ourselves in the departments in North, because now what is also becoming an issue that we're working on is the fact that if it's a sexual case, it goes to the police, it goes to state, it goes to the department, human rights, like we're doing in the Free State. Then you find that by the time, and we're dealing with the same learner and the same parents, and by the time we get in a state, the parents are exhausted, the learner has been through so many emotional, through discussing the particular case. So we're finding ways of how do we then streamline our cases and align ourselves so that we don't exhaust the learner and get them to continue their life immediately. And those are the particular areas that we're focusing on when it comes to the issue of ethics. That's in summary, Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Mokolani, the second last presentation.
Thanks, Chair. I will be presenting on the professional development wing of SAIS. Just to begin by saying, in terms of SAIS, we get our professional mandate from the SAIS Act as amended by the Basic Education Laws Amendment Act of 2011. There's a section in the Act that says SAIS must manage a system of continuing professional teacher development. That is what CPTD stands for. And secondly, the National Policy Framework on Teacher Education, which was gazetted in 2007, gives us that mandate directly to say SAIS must manage a system of continuing professional development and be resourced by the Department of Basic Education. The other important document that is supporting our mandate is the Integrated Strategic Training Framework for Teacher Education and Development. That is, we are supporting the needs that are coming from the system. When educators identify needs, they need to make sure that they develop themselves through the state-approved providers and state-endorsed professional development activities. And finally, if you check the education section of the National Development Plan, it also speaks into the fact that all professional development programs that are there must be approved by SAIS, the providers and the activities must be endorsed by SAIS. So with regard to the CPTD system, it really boils down to SAIS approving everyone who's providing professional development. So in that regard, SAIS is not a provider of professional development. Provisioning comes from the employer, Department of Education, nine provinces, teacher unions, higher education institutions, professional associations, etc. So all of them have to apply to us for us to approve them. Once approved, they need to bring in their activities. We need to evaluate those activities, endorse them. But what is also important to the process of endorsement is to allocate professional development points to each activity. So when educators engage in professional development activities, whether from provincial departments of education, from teacher unions, from higher education institutions, already there will be earning points from the ones that are endorsed by SAIS. But just first, we needed to give you that background so that you can understand where we are coming from. And we have a joint SAIS Department of Basic Education and Provincial Education Department task team that meets on a monthly basis to make sure that we manage the entire CPTD system process. Now, in terms of our targets for 2013-14, there are a few things that we are doing. We ran a pilot on the CPTD system from 2009. The report was out in 2011. One of the key issues that came out of the report was that SAIS doesn't have provincial presence, and therefore it's going to be difficult for us to manage the CPTD system at provincial level if we don't have that. Now, in responding to those recommendations, we are looking at developing a provincial presence concept document, but in the interim, while engaging in research and doing that, we are recruiting 9 people who will assist us in managing the CPTD system at provincial level. And those will be recruited from the retired lecturers, educators, etc. But they will manage the CPTD system at provincial level in collaboration with the 9 provincial education departments, especially your teacher development unit, so that you have that collaboration at provincial level. Secondly, we are developing an electronic and manual professional development portfolio. We call it PDP. It will be used when educators engage in professional development. They need to make sure that they record what they are doing in that portfolio. They reflect on their own practice in terms of looking at the extent at which what they are doing in terms of developing themselves is contributing to professional practice. So we want them to keep that, but also to keep record of their professional development points, so that when we deal with monitoring and evaluation, they won't submit that to say we'll just monitor a certain percentage just to check if they are really doing it. Then the other main program that we are running for this year, this financial year, will be the sign up of educators on the CPTD information system. The CPTD system has got an ICT component called CPTD information system. We need to make sure that all educators are on the system, because they'll be able to use the self-service portal to upload their points, PD activities, do the portfolio online, and a whole lot of other things. Therefore, this year we've divided them in 3 different cohorts as we are beginning to roll out the CPTD system. The first cohort, which will be principals and deputy principals, we are signing them up this year between January and December, so that January 2014 onwards, they start with their professional CPTD system cycle. The cycle runs for 3 years. As they end points, they need to go do that over 3 years and end 150 points at the end of 3 year cycle. Next year, we will be signing up the 55,000 plus heads of department. They will start with their first cycle in 2015. Then the next year, it will be the third cohort, which is your quiz level 1 educator. The principals that we are signing up, as I've indicated, they will start from 2014 in terms of earning their points. By the end of 2016, they should have earned 150 points. But it's important also to notice that in 2017, they will be starting a new cycle, and therefore their 150 points will fall off, and they start on a clean slate, because we are dealing with a discrete cycle and not a rolling cycle over 3 years. So that's what we are doing at the moment with regard to the CPTD system. And we've got a monitoring component of it, monitoring and evaluation, that we'll be putting in place, so that we are really sure that these things are happening on the ground. Then in terms of our provider approval and endorsement, we are recruiting 54 new evaluators. Remember, the applications that are sent to FACE for provider approval and for activity endorsement need to be evaluated for quality assurance purposes. So we are hoping we'll approve 150 providers this year and endorse 450 professional development activities. We are also working on the monitoring and evaluation framework and the related tools, so that we can be in a position to go and check the provider's site, verify if what they said on paper really corresponds with what they are saying they will be doing. We'll have the school visits just to check if sign-up is being done. The professional development portfolio will be used as a verification tool to check if development is really happening. That's on professional development. With regard to research, quickly, there are a few things that we are doing. One, we need to make sure that we have policy positions to inform and advise the Minister of Basic Education. There are two areas that we are targeting. because we are signing up, principals and deputy principals, one of the things that we are doing is to identify their needs, professional development needs. And the reason for that is for us to inform the providers so that they come up with programs that are relevant to the needs of the principals. And that process has already started, and just yesterday we were looking at the preliminary findings, and one of the issues that is coming up is your financial management across all principals and deputies, and also computer literacy and other curriculum management is another area that they are highlighting. But by the end of the year, we should be able to produce a report and advise the minister accordingly. And the other area that we are working on is around internal teacher migration, just to see the movement of teachers across in the country, if it's really happening and how is it affecting the system. Then the four research projects that we are working on, one, we are looking at the attitudes of principals and principals on professional development. Do they really attach any meaning to it? Or is it something that they do because it's supposed to be done? Is it really improving their own professional practice or not? And we are looking at the state of the teaching profession, but with special focus on the data that we'll be gathering around principals and deputy principals, so that we are informing the ministry, we are informing the education sector in terms of the kind of principals we are having in the system, and also the kind of deputy principals we are having in the system. The other area is we've done 2 years ago or a year ago an analysis of teacher misconduct cases that we are receiving. We looked at 2008 and 2009, but we felt we needed to have a longer period, and therefore we'll be analyzing 2008, 9, 10, 11, and 12, do a 5-year review. And yeah, we have a big professional magazine that we are working on. We released one last year and we are working on the new one this year. And finally, disseminating the policy and research publications that we are doing, because if we are engaging in this research and not disseminating it, it's as good as not doing it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Chair, let me just check with the Chairperson of Council if he has an additional two, and then the leader from the department.
Well, thanks, Chair. If I may add, we also interact with other stakeholders the world over, African Teacher Regulatory Authorities and International Forum of Teacher Regulatory Authorities as well. But importantly, we are an autonomous structure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just 2 points that I wanted to add. In compliance with the legislative requirements, I must confirm that SAIS provides quarterly reports to the department. And that secondly, we also note the initiatives to provide quick resolution in maintaining the code of ethics by them establishing memorandum of understanding at the level of the provinces, which might require us to always disaggregate information, so that as members seated here, would you know the trends within your own provinces as to what is actually transpiring. Thirdly, there is a systemic mechanism of recognizing the innovative and the professional practice in terms of upholding the profession and celebrating a teacher through a themes that are always provided by the World Bodies, as said by the Chairperson of Council, Education International, which are celebrated always in October. But what is much more critical in doing so is that there is a systemic way of identifying excellence and recognizing the teacher in affirming the profession. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable members, it's now your opportunity to interact with the presentation. I'll start with Honorable. Let me start with you. Honorable. Yeah, in that. Thanks.
Sir, thank you.
Yeah.
coming up my feet. Chairperson, thank you very much, and let me thank the presentation from Faith. Chairperson, it's the first time that we meet Faith here in this term. I would like to start by with the introduction that was made, that we are going to get the presentation on what SAFE is going to do in the oncoming years. And I was of the opinion that we are not going to get anything what was SAFE doing for the past 15 years or 17 years since the establishment of SAFE. And I think we needed some more clarity on why was SAFE not visible. Because SAFE was not visible, was not felt down for quite some time. I was also a teacher. Some money was deducted from me for SAFE for quite some time. And I only knew or hear something about SAFE when I go to a SATU meeting or so. Then I will know which body is doing this. So I think SAFE has not been visible to the provinces or to on the ground for quite some time. And I would like to know, besides being taken from or being moved from pillar to post, what else has SAFE really been doing? Because there was a budget for everything in SAFE. For SAFE, what was SAFE really, or what was SAFE really doing the past many years in the professional development? If I understood you correctly, you said the professional development was not in your mandate, or was in your mandate, but you could not. I'm not sure what were you really saying, because I thought it was not in your mandate before, and now it's only that it's going to be. It's now that you will be able to professionalize or to do a professional development within the teachers. Because I was asking also Chairperson to you, who says is going to develop teachers professionally. Do they have a strategic plan on how are they going to do this and when? Because we've got teachers like places like Omalibode. Those rare rural areas where SAFE is really not known. You talked about ethical conduct, the code of ethics. I think you when you said you are going to educate learners and parents, that's a good start. I think also you need to go back again to the educators, because you know, people would know the code of conduct. I mean, they would know the ethical conduct that they are supposed to display at places. But if there is nobody who's monitoring, or there is nobody who keeps on, if there are new tendencies that are developing within the system or within the educators, and nobody is taking notice of that, they will keep off doing unethical conduct. I think also you need to go back to the teachers. There are too many cases. too many unethical conducts that is or misconduct that is done by the educators. I'm not sure if that is because they are ignorant or what. The Department of Education has been in loggerheads with the unions and educators at large about issues of development. Says to me, Says was also quite quiet on that on the issue. As a result, we thought Says is a development entity within the education system. But to me, you did not help the Department of Education. You did not help the ministry in that area. Why? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I'm not a teacher. I won't ask you difficult questions. I don't know anything about teaching. Okay. SAYS has begun to register college late lecturers. Given the fact that there is no teaching qualification in South Africa for college lecturers, how does SAYS handle the registration of college lecturers, including the private colleges? And the second one will be does SAYS ensure that educators registered provide valid qualification to SAYS? And also on ethics, I would like to know how many in the case of ethics that you are dealing with. We know that the teenage pregnancy is on the rise nowadays in schools, and some of those cases of pregnancy, teachers are perpetrators. How many have you dealt with? And if you can update us on that one. Is there any provision made for the temporary teachers in terms of registration? I didn't hear much about that. And what are your challenges? Let's see. Yeah, let me stop there.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Honorable Member.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. You know, Chairperson, I would like to have the document and my colleague, Honorable Ranto, just quickly refer to that one. The annual strategic document of the year 2012-2013 will just start at 10-11-11-12 and so on, carry on. And the reason why I'm asking that question is that you received a good amount from Department of Basic Education every year. And doesn't matter that this body is actually autonomous, but receiving money from the Department of Basic Education, that actually you have now a duty to report to the Department of Basic Education what you're actually doing with that money each and every year. And also in connection with your auditing of your books, that information must also come to the Department of Basic Education and also to this select committee every year. And this morning's briefing from you is actually an eye-opener to me as a member of the select committee. I was also previously a member of SAFE, or a signed-up member. I was when I was a teacher. Now, this information here, I must actually now go to my area and then share this information with the members, with the teachers. I know that 10 rand a month is not so much money, but there is an obligation between this forum or this entity to report to the teacher on a yearly basis. Now my question starts with, I just want to make that few comments on the chairperson. Then my first question is in connection with the medium-term expenditure funding of this entity. Now, looking at the receipts, Honorable Chairperson, the 2013-14 medium-term estimate is 55 million, and then goes up to 62 million, and then in 2015-16, it's down to 59 million. I want from you to explain to us why there's a drop, eventually a rise, and then a drop. And then looking at the administration fees, also, there's a 52.9, and then a 52.1, and then a 52.2, and a 52.2, and then there's actually a, a platoon. And then the other one also, where my worry is, the entity receipts other than sales start at 2008 and 2009, it's 4.6 million, and then it jumps up 11.2 million, and eventually drop down the mountain to 2.8 million, and then rise 5 million, and then 12 million. And then eventually there's also now a steep decrease, 2 million, and then 10 million. Explain to us why that difference is there, especially in connection with the receipt in your organization. And my other question is also, we, all of us now, know that there's a problem with our learners in the foundation phase, grade 1, 2, and 3. The last report we had was that there is a slight improvement in the quality of those learners. But the other document, NIDU, said that our teachers can't teach. Now that's actually an embarrassment to me as a previous teacher. Why can't we not teach? It's strange to me, you know. Now my question to you is, where's your responsibility in the development of the teacher, and also work and inside the Department of Basic Education to help our education system in this country? What are you doing? Because a lot of teachers, round about, I carried it up here somewhere, but let's leave that now. That's a huge problem for us, because if we don't improve our education system in this country, then will be in future a very, very bleak picture of the quality of workers in all the areas of our land. We must actually have the position and the situation that other countries in Africa must come to South Africa to come and collect our teachers so that we can teach them. We do have a lot of entities who's actually zooming in into education. What is the problem? And then, Honorable Chairperson, I'm very sorry, but I'm very, very much interested in education. I'm still a teacher. If somebody come to me now, give me the opportunity, go back, I will go back to teach. I will teach till I'm 100 years old. Now, the owners of the building, on the slide, I think it's slide 3, the rental for offices has increased from 950,000 in 2012 to 6.6 million in 2015. Now, I think maybe the cost of the year, each and every year, let it rise to 6.6 million. Now I want to find out who's the owner of that building and what is the percentage of increase of the rental of that building each and every year. Maybe it's 10%, or maybe it's less, or maybe it's more than that. So from 2012, right now, increase from 950. Doesn't say from when. 950,000 from when? I see here is 2012. Is my understanding correct?
950,000 in 2012 to 6.6 million in 2014.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. Just give us that information. And then the other one, Honorable Chairperson, is the Building Reserve Fund is aimed at purchasing the building by 2015. Now this purchasing the building, is it that one, bullet one? Is that the building? And then there's the other one also in Pisaki Street. The building in Pisaki Street was sold in an auction for 10.5 million. And you actually bought that building. Or was it the building belonging to you, which you auctioned for that price? Chairperson, I will stick to those questions. Maybe if we do have another opportunity, I will set it up for the hearing.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm afraid this principal next to me took like half of my questions. But I will try to upheld some standard at least. Yes, Madam Chair, on the rental contract that runs till 30th of June 2016, what I don't understand, we are hearing that they will be purchasing the building by 2015. Now, if you purchase it by 2015 and the rental is still 2016, which is a year later, I'd like to know what happens with that year that you've already purchased. If I've got a rental contract for 2016 and I'm buying it on 2015, is there a penalty on that year that you've not rented it? Is it being deducted from the price? I'd just like to know that. And then the uphold the image of the teaching profession. I think some of my colleagues already mentioned it as well. And one of the problems that we have is the substandard of our teachers these days. With the Department of Basic Education, we really do pick up that quality of our standards, not just in not being able to educate 100%, some of them, not all of them, and then also we have the image problem, but image is like being punctual at school for teachers itself, not coming to school at 10 o'clock and things like that. And I'd like to know these programs that you have, how many teachers themselves get exploited to that and how many teachers are on these programs in this key functions which you are trying to achieve, to institute discipline, investigate complaints of improper conduct, to uphold the image of teaching profession. Obviously, this entails a number of teachers that you are working with. If you can perhaps just extend a bit of knowledge on that. Thank you.
Thank you. I've got just a few questions to raise. You know the difficulties that you understand if you are the last one in the speaker's list to raise questions, it becomes very difficult. But I will try to raise them anyway. One is that I'm struggling to. I want to take the phase along. You know, that I understand that teachers are members of teacher organization first, and then they also become your member again. So teachers subscribe to teacher organization and they are also your members in terms of that. Now what I want to check, I know that maybe it's my thinking, sense will correct me, that the teacher organization represent teachers' labor interest, then says represent their professional interest or something else, something of that sort. But if you look in between chair, which is making me difficult for me to understand, there I want to check with SAFE, at what stage do you as the body represent represent the interest of your member, which is the educator, in terms of boosting their moral compass and support on issues such as raised by research, contextual factors, behavioral problems, and salaries. How often do you speak on and say, but yeah, instead of regulating your professional conduct, because to me, professionalism must go with even your remuneration. I'm not a trade union member. I'm just raising it. If you have them, I've seen a number of times, what is that organization, SAMA, in health. They represent their members' interests left, right, and center, whether from the Perth or from the professional work they do. But they speak on that. They can even find space to regulate the level of salaries of their own members to say whether they satisfy their professionalism or not. That's the question I wanted to raise. I know it's complicated, Chair. I wanted just to raise it. The second point that I want to raise, Chair, is the presentation that the membership fee of your members makes up almost 90% of your total revenue. But what I want to check with you is that the grants that you receive from the department, what is the volume, what is the size of that grant? Does that grant assist you in terms of percentage, maybe in terms of figures? Is it the grant that is sufficient for you to assist you to be able to discharge your function? And then the question on the case, the management of cases. I just want to ask this question. Which cases top your agenda? Is it about the sexual harassment cases? Is it about the other ethical behavior? Is it related only to that, or is it about absenteeism? Is it about which cases is at the top of your agenda in terms of your ethical conduct? And Chair, that will be my last question.
Thank you, Honourable Blackie. Before I hand over to State to respond to the question, I think also where I'm seated, I really need, maybe you will be in a better place. I need to be clarified around the issue of the rental. I just want to talk to what the other members, because I'm a little bit confused. There's this thing that you've got a contract that ends on 2016. So if you are saying that you'll be in a position to pay that, because to me it's rental, or did you have that rental with the option of buying it, maybe you should clarify us. I want to know what are the legal or cost implications, because contract is a contract, something that you have agreed to. What are the legal and cost implications around that issue? Under the code of ethics, I listened when you indicate that you raise three issues under code of ethics. This is your human resource, human relations, your corporal punishment, and sexual incidents. But one doesn't even get where the system of where we've got cases of teachers who are teaching using fraudulent documents, like the case in Pointing case in KZN, where we have around 170 teachers who didn't qualify. How do you deal with that? Or what actually? Why are you not raising that? Or in which sector does that fall? The other thing is that, like Honorable Rancho was saying, we really this council, one doesn't feel it in the provinces, and it's not like it started yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested to if you can brief us as this committee, in the past years, what is that you have been doing? What are the challenges, and what has been your achievement up to this date?
Maybe if they can also tell us about their programs and strategies, the state is engaged in to popularize itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Chair, I just need some indication from the side of the committee in terms of time so that we can budget our responses.
No, you respond because there might be follow-up questions and new questions.
Thank you very much. What we'll do is I'll ask the panel to respond to specifics that pertain to their portfolios, including the chairperson and the departmental officials, and then I will take the balance of the comments. We'll start off with the CFO.
Okay.
No, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Let me explain the issue of building. There were a number of questions which arose there, and I understand the confusion where it starts. We're talking of two buildings, one rented, one sold, one to be purchased. As early somewhere around 2007, started early 2005, 2006, the council was realized that they were accommodated at ELRC, Education Labor Relations Council. They realized that from time to time, ELRC was requesting space from the side which SAIS had already occupied. We were squeezed up, were growing, they were growing. Obviously, their growth would receive preference because it was their building. Then the council started looking for a building to buy so that SAIS can get its own accommodation. SAIS at that time, based on the resources it had, purchased a building in Sisakhe Street, Pretoria City, with the idea to renovate that building and make it user-friendly. At that time, the office was, that building was not in a state where we can simply move in. Then while they were planning to budget for the renovation of the building, there was a public outcry. We even came to a portfolio committee and explained about that building, and the council was told, why can't you get rid of that building? The council had to decide to sell the building because there was a public pressure to say, how much you bought it for, how much will you renovate it for? The council took a decision to get rid of that building. From 2009, that decision was there to sell the building. The building could not move as we all thought. It was in the market from that time. While at the same time that was on the market, they had to take a decision to say, because ELRC was demanded the full space, and we had to move to another building. So we ended up renting two buildings adjacent to ELRC. Being a small organization of less than, we were less than 70 at that time, but we had to look for space this size. That's when we were paying the less rent, which the increase now I have to explain. We're paying less rent in those two offices which were adjusted to LRC. So the council took a decision and get into a process of locating office space which they can rent to buy. It was a process which took the council almost 2 years, if you check from 2009. It's only last year in July when, after they have located this building, this building which will be built to the same specifications which we can occupy 1st of July last year, which we occupied. We opened it in October. The minister was there. She's the one who opened the building. But we are renting it with the option to buy, as I've indicated. So in terms of the contract, we signed the contract to run from 1st of July 2012 up to June 2016 with the provision that should we accumulate the money which would be equal to the purchase price, which is 59,800,000, we can settle the building with no penalty. The council did not want to promise that we can sign a shorter one because we are selling the one in Sisakhe Street, because the sale had run for a few years without the success. You remember at that time, the property market had some serious pressure. Properties were not selling very well. They were not moving. We became a victim of that period as well. So it's only this year in February when we had the auction and we managed to get a buyer. And to show that because the building was there alone, not utilized, it loses value instead of appreciating the value. We bought it for 12.1 and we had to sell it via an auction and managed to get 10.5, which we had no choice. If you look at the period, the building was in the market and we're not getting a buyer. So that's the money which will come. The cost implication, I think I did indicate, there are no legal implications when we settle it early. So with this proceeds from the sale of that building, and the 260 which we are budgeting every month from each and every educator towards that building, by end of December, the money will add up to the purchase price. So which means we have a chance of settling early. Just now we'll get into the process with Treasury to be able to get the necessary authority to carry on with that transaction of purchasing that building which we have leased to buy. So the increase of rental was that from the other buildings we're paying less, although there were two, but this one, because it's a very little bit big building which will also take care of our growth, and we've got good space for any development, the rental is a little bit higher, 6.6 per annum, and it's escalating at 10%. So we'll avoid all this escalation once we buy it end of this financial year. I think that this explanation would have tried to kill few of the questions raised. Let me go to the other questions. The size of the grant, is it from the DBE? Is it enough? This CPTD came it arose from the, in 2009, Yes. So from all those years, the task team of the department and SAFE, and including the stakeholders, all the stakeholders where they were involved, were in the process of planning. And during those planning phases, they were giving us money. Because that, during the planning, we had to set up, we had to acquire the electronic system to be able to run, we had to develop the software, we had to develop the entire system, how it will work. They were giving us funds every year, and we could not spend that money and finish it. No single year we finished it. We always carry over a certain amount to the next year. So when they give us the money for this year, it will be in addition to what we could not finish last year. As I've indicated, we could not spend last year, we could not finish 7.8, which comes from them. And they are giving us 7.3. In addition to 7.8, it will be 14. For now, we are still at the beginning of running it now. The money is still enough for us. As we move along, it will tell us exactly what is happening with this entire process. So, but for now, the budget is sufficient of the CPTD. The grant will come from the department. I'm trying to see some of them are the ones which I explained about the building in Fisaki.
Morris, why are the expenses going up and down and the receipts are going up and down, they're not constant?
Okay, no, I think I'm there now. All the rest were too much on the building. I was just very tired, not committing any. No, thanks. Let me indicate that in terms of the receipts, it is going up and down. From 55 to 62, then 59. Let me explain that. you will see that in 2013, 2014, when you look at the transfers received, it's zero at the bottom, the last line. The transfers we're talking about is the money coming from the department, that grant. So that 2013-14 is the budget which we need approval before the beginning of the financial year. So in terms of the budgeting process, you cannot put an amount where the fund is not guaranteed. Now, because we have it in writing, that money, this month, the council will adjudicate the adjustment. There will be 15 million where there is zero. So that zero, we knew we'll get money, but we just knew it from word of mouth. So in terms of budgeting process, you don't do that, because if it's a receipt, you budget for it, then you'll spend it at the bottom while you are not receiving it, which is risky in terms of your operation. You'll go into a deficit. Then coming to, it went up in another year. You see the 7.2 came in. We're still projecting that we'll get 7.2. Historically, we've been getting this 7.2 for the past 4 years. So we know we'll get it, but when we come to the budget to be approved by the minister, we don't add it until we get a guarantee. But we project, we know that it will come. Then going to the last one, 2015-2016, why is it going down? When you look on the interest, the column on the interest at the bottom. In 2014-2015, you'll see we're budgeting 3 million. That 3 million because we're still building the reserve fund. So the interest from the building reserve fund, because there is good little bit of good cash there, it's high. So the moment we buy the building, no more reserve fund to generate interest. So it's 300,000 that we are projecting, which will be just from our savings account. I think I did explain those ups and downs there. The other item which let me indicate it, they mentioned the issue of where is our strategic plan? Why are we not updating them on what happened? Let me indicate that every year we do come before the beginning of the financial year, we present the budget and the strategic plan to portfolio committee, and we only came to this committee once and not in the term of the previous one to explain. So on invitation, we present this. We do have this documentation. The same will happen when now we're finishing with our annual reporting, our financial statements, and our performance. After August, we'll be presenting to the portfolio committee. That's always scheduled. We'll do that, which we believe, with your assistance, how we can present to you, we'll be able to present that once it's done. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me deal with the issues on registration first, and then we can go to ethics. With the registration coming to temporary educators, we don't categorize them as temporary educators. Depending on the qualification, if they're fully qualified, then they register. Despite their state of employment, then if they have a full qualification, they get a certificate and they are registered for forever. But if they're filling in any of the other categories, then we register them as they get employed. It's a bit of a tussle if they are not fully qualified and they're still studying, because every time their contracts come to an end, they must come back and renew, and sometimes they're being tossed between different schools, then we have to change the school. Because as I said earlier, with conditional registration, we ensure that we attach them to a particular school. So if the contract ends, then they go to another school, and sometimes the contract gets renewed a little bit later in the year. So it gives them that particular challenge, but it's something that we're working to handle on. The issue of valid qualifications, we work with Umalusi and SAPO quite closely. With the foreign educators, all their qualifications must be verified by SAPO first to ensure that they are valid and get translated into the entry of South African qualifications before we can register them. So with the foreign educators, that's what we do from all the countries that they're coming from. With our own educators in our country, yes, there's quite a rise of regular qualifications, working with the smallest and verifying their qualification and the matric certificate, we have had quite, as the chairperson was saying, quite a lot of issues around fraudulent qualification, especially in KwaZulu-Natal. But two categories that we find when we're doing the investigation is that one, some of the educators are not necessarily having fraudulent qualifications, but they were studying in the colleges prior to them being closed. And some of them had supplementaries that they never finished writing. And when the colleges were merged with universities, then educators never went back, because when they went to university to finish the one subject that they were missing to get a diploma, they were told to do a BA. So educators decided, because it was already at that time that some of them were being employed. So the third effect. But the other thing that we picked up is that when the minister, I think it was Minister Naledi Pandor, introduced that educators will start at RQV15, which is matric for 4 years instead of the 3 years that are currently there. So when educators were beginning to upgrade their qualifications from matric and 3 years to the 4 years that was being said, that is where the most of the fraudulent qualifications are coming in, with the different qualifications that teachers are doing to try and upgrade and get to that system. So we're working with KwaZulu-Natal and other provinces to try and minimize that. But I must say that there are extreme cases where we have involved the police, where educators will come into the office with fraudulent qualifications from their matric certificates and to their actual post-grad qualifications, where they have acknowledged that they have voted somewhere where the police have been involved. I know there's one lady who was sent to prison for a while because she refused to explain where she got. The others are explaining and working on that one. So it's something that we are looking at. When it comes to college lecturers, you're right, there is not a particular qualification for college lecturers. We're working on that. We have a partnership with VVOB, which is a consortium from Belgium, and we have a pilot that we're running in Free State with the Free State colleges to try and see how do assist educators in colleges to come together into a particular qualification and how do we assist them in their professional development side of it. But we are currently saying college lecturers come in with the qualifications that some of them have procured from the college, and then we register them. But again, they're also falling under the conditional registration because we're attached to the particular college to teach what they specialize on. But being guided by the letter that they bring from the college to say that they're employed, and this is the subject that they'll be offering based on the qualifications that they have. So that is what we're currently doing. But it's not as clear-cut as we do with educators out there. When it comes to ethics cases, maybe start with a question on teachers coming on time. When I was talking to ethics, I said we are focusing primarily on human relations, which includes the lateness of teachers coming, the non-submissions of their mark schedules on time and everything else. Now, what we do on there is that some of the things are employer-employee related. So we refer them back to the department, but keep an eye to report back to the educator on what needs to happen. And some of the cases we refer to the ELRC because they're labor-related, where educator is disputing the post that he or she has applied for. It's not within our ambit, but because we're working with the ELRC, then we refer them and keep track on that one. That's what we usually do. But we've also just recently renewed our partnership with the QLTC of the department to try and ensure that the time on task and all those things that the QLTC is embedded on. That is safe. When we go out and do our advocacy, we also ensure that we're in line that on educators. We have developed what we call teacher assistant facility. This is to ensure that we assist educators, not only maybe what the member was asking on saying, how do we assist educators without just coming in and punishing them? So this is to ensure that educators who need assistance, some of them, because we go, I think we went to the Eastern Cape and realized that educators have a drinking problem, and before we can just come in and say we're firing people, we're not coming to work, we need to find a way of how to assist the department with the wellness program in our program and find solutions to assist these educators. We've launched it in the Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and I must say it's working quite well because it's involved the district and the educators are able to communicate with us on those areas, and we're able to refer them to where they need assistance, and then we can come back on that one. But it's a new program that we started this year to say that identify and begin to assist educators. When it comes to teen pregnancy, it's something that as SAIS we have not really been involved in. But we just got involved with the Department of Education, and we're busy on a document that we're coming out calling Speak Out Against Abuse, where it's focusing on the teenagers. From the department side, they are getting the teenagers, the teen pregnancy, because the campaign that they are running. From our side, because our sexual cases, some of them have
I haven't seen learners who become pregnant through the sexual cases. We're then combining our efforts and coming up with a curriculum against abuse that we want to launch and make make the awareness even more and how we can begin to help. But it's also including other NGOs that are dealing with learners and the pregnancy and the rate of abortions that is being happening, because that's one thing that we realize when we're doing this, that the doctors, because sometimes we have to go and verify with doctors, and the doctors were saying the number of abortions that they are doing on the learners is on a rise. So that's something that we only not have to focus in engaging our learners to saying it's not only abortion, but it therefore means the minute you get pregnant, it's unprotected sex that they're engaging in, and it can lead to other diseases which will shorten their lifespan as well. When it comes to
the highest number of cases.
Yes, the highest number of cases is between sexual relations and corporal punishment. And we're currently sitting, in fact, I'm meeting the Western Cape today, on how do we help educators with alternatives to corporal punishment, because we don't only want to focus that there's a rise in corporal punishment, but we've also identified the fact that educators are not really able to deal with how the children are behaving on the day. So how do we then as an organization come up with ways of alternative corporal punishment? Now, when I was an educator a couple of years ago, it was introduced a alternative corporal punishment prior to corporal punishment being done away with. But when we look at those, they're really not assisting, because learners don't want to go to a corner and sit and reflect on what they've done. You need to come up with ways of necessarily assisting them. And educators are raising the issue that we don't want to hit the children. We don't, but at times you get to an extent where they lose their cool. So we're training educators through the teacher assistant facility how to control their cool, but in a way also acknowledging that we need to assist educators to make sure that the school there's classroom management, because there seems to be lack of classroom management in the areas that we are focusing on. And those are the current 2013-14 that we're backing from 2012 to ensure that we have educators. So it therefore means, as states, we're also coming up, despite that the unions are, I think the difference between us and unions are more defending the members and ensuring that our members are there. And from ourselves, we want now members, because we've identified that teachers see states as a shambok caring organization, and we want to change that pilot to ensure one. In fact, I was saying to a school in Bugwambe that it's South African Council for Educators, so it's your council. You need to understand that you can come to us when you need particular help prior to awaiting us to come and say we're charging you. So we're busy turning and changing that. I think through our communications division, our advocates, that's why we're saying we're engaging educators more. I think the member was asking, this year we're focusing on talking to about 35,000 teachers, just to explain to them the code of conduct and what are the implications of the consequences to be caught on that one. So we don't want to come in and say, in fact, what we usually do when we're running the workshop is say, don't say we didn't tell you, because we know you're aware of it, but now we have come and we've taken you through and taken, because there are things that educators take for granted. For example, with the department, you can't charge them if they've done something on a weekend, but it says we can. And with the department, if they resign from the department, the department can't follow them, but it's on the weekend. Now, these are the things that educators need to understand that we're doing. So prior to us, we've realized that there's a lot of ignorance from educators in understanding what's going on and what could get them into trouble. And we are, with a program that I've then identified, we're beginning to ensure that teachers are being assisted prior to us saying, we're giving up and now we're charging you and we're sucking you off the roll, which is quite a sad thing that we need to do most of the time, but necessary so that those culprits in education, because there are culprits who are spoiling the name of educators out there, we need to get out of the system.
Thank you.
Sorry, before that, I'm going to request that stick to the questions, don't try to elaborate, because members would have follow-up questions and other new questions.
Sure.
Thanks, Chair. I think with regard to the issues that were raised on professional development, I think I agree for the past number of years, state has been doing minimal work on teacher development, mainly because of budgetary constraints. But I think the most important issue is that providing professional development is not our key mandate, it's not our core responsibility. And I think our colleagues from DBE will agree with us that now we've tried to clarify the rules. says is the DBE together with the provincial departments of education are responsible for providing all the programs, the courses, you name it. But we are not in the business of doing that. Our role is to take those activities that they are providing, evaluate them, quality assure them, award points to them. So that when teachers engage in development from their side, identify the needs from their side and say, how can we address this need? We come in and say, this is the menu of different providers, this is the menu of different activities that we've endorsed, these are the providers that we've approved, now you can choose from what we have. So I think we need to clarify that. And even in terms of the integrated strategic planning framework, it's very clear in terms of what CIT is responsible for and also what the Department of Education and the nine provinces are responsible for. And hence, the CFO was saying for the past, since 2007, we've been working on putting all systems into place, developing the IT system, making sure that all the provinces are involved in a joint planning, so that from this year onwards, we are beginning with a full rollout throughout the country. Now everyone is on board, all the nine provincial heads of departments are on board. From next year, January, we'll be starting with a particular bigger process. So that's where the distinction is between the two. But previously, yes, I agree, because of the limited resources and not necessarily playing a role that we were supposed to play.
Thank you. And later you can talk about foundation phase teachers.
You're coming. Thanks. Well, having not interacted with you for quite some time now, obviously there will be a lot of lack of information that we have been interacting with the portfolio committee. So one other thing is that the council is not a permanent structure. On a four-year basis, it is being changed. Is it four?
Yes.
Yeah. So in July, we'll be having a new council that has to be inaugurated and so on. So the issue of invisibility, in fact, from where we are standing as a new council that came in 2009, CIT is more visible than it was before. You would know that through advocacy, then people are beginning to report cases to say if cases are reported in the department and there is no movement, there's nothing that bars educators and the community from reporting those cases to SAIS. And SAIS, number of cases has since increased. But the challenge is the funding. Because you would know that in the main, before Bella came in, the Bella Act, before it came in, the issues around SAIS are purely funded by teachers. And no cent before there was this grant coming in. Teachers were funding SAIS in totality in a way. So obviously we're dealing with teachers than anybody else when it comes to a central relationship with learners. But other departments have been very proactive. They are dealing with issues around sugar daddies, because that is also a problem. It can be that teenage pregnancy that we see throughout the country could be coming from one quarter. Due to socioeconomic problems, learners who hitchhike to school, they end up being abused by those taxi drivers and so on. So the issue of remuneration, it's a sectoral matter that is dealt with at the level of Education Labor Relations Council. This is not dealing with that as part of its mandate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Kojana, any points from you?
I just wanted to re-emphasize the point about responsibilities. SAIS's responsibility is to quality assure the teacher education program. So if I could just indicate, you know, before the CPTD program got introduced, and in fact even as we speak now, there's a large variety of programs that are offered by provincial departments, by private providers and HEIs. And if you look at the reports that are coming through, the quality of many of those programs is not of the desired level. And so SACE is going to be given the responsibility of making sure that whatever teachers are presented with is endorsed. The endorsement program is intended to do that. So when the system is fully operational, and if obviously it's properly implemented, quality assurance of professional development programs is going to be SACE's function. So I just thought it's important to clarify that. Just also then to indicate that recently the department has been putting a lot of pressure on the 112 teacher centers that are in the country that support teachers at the local level. And we've had discussions with SACE about mutual support to make sure that the employee assistance facility activities happen at the local level as far as possible. Thanks.
Just a comment or two from my side, Chair, before we hand over. I think the honourable members are spot on with the observations, and it confirms what I said in my opening remarks about our performance not being very much higher than satisfactory. We admit that. And the main constraint over the years has been the actual low budget that we have. But then we try to maximize our outreach via the unions and the department initiatives. Whenever the unions or the departments are having initiatives in the provinces, we go. But there is a lot more to be done in that area, and we definitely want now to remodel when the new council comes in August this year. One of the main challenges will be to remodel our modus operandi and to bring back, like we have brought back professional development to the fore, we want to bring back outreach and going out to schools to see what's actually happening in schools besides spreading the word about SAFE. So we definitely have an area that we have to strengthen our operations on. And when we remodel our budget and our strategic plan, I will emphasize to council this aspect. It's nice for members to know what SAFE has been doing since its early days. In its very early days, it spent close to 10 years actually formulating itself. Remember, it's the first time this country has had a professional council for teachers, for all teachers of this country. And we had to make sure that there is buy-in from the stakeholders, in particular the unions, and the unions that come with a particular mindset. And in the first 10 years or so, it was getting to know the terrain, finding out what is it actually that SAFE has to do, and then we produced our founding documents. It's only in the year 2000 that legislation put SAFE as an autonomous entity, the SAFE Act number 31 of the year 2000. So since then, it has been a question of populating SAFE, getting the staff, finding premises. And really in the year 2005, you could say that we actually began our work in some kind of orderly way, dealing with cases. Hardly much professional development those days because the mandate was simply to promote professional development, but registration taking a lot of time. And since we had no previous experience, it was a very steep learning curve in terms of correcting our processes. But I think we have overcome all of that, and now we are poised to really do the work that we have to do. The other point I just wanted to touch on, Chair, before I hand back, is this dynamic of working with the unions and dealing with union members and having union members in our council. It always comes up in some guise or the other. And I must say to the select committee that having unions in the council, just like having ministerial reps in the council, has posed no special difficulty to the council. There may be a perception somewhere there that this is controlled by the ministry, or this is controlled indirectly by the minister's reps, or indirectly by the union reps. But I must confess that that has not been the case there. In fact, union members are very strict. When they go out and they deal with cases, very often union members are judging their own members, and they are the ones that sometimes give the harshest sanctions
other than sometimes we make it prosecutors, and it's not well known. And maybe one day when select committee members are interested, we could actually invite you to a hearing to actually witness how a hearing takes place. So you would be, so there is no negative dynamic about working with unions. And then also this question about members' interests vis-a-vis the unions taking interest in the members. We, as the CFO, COO was saying, we give all the assistance that we can to members. But we do not join teachers in their labor issues. But if teachers, while they are in labor action, act unprofessionally, then definitely it becomes our business. Council deals with that. So while you may be in labor action, you have to still conduct yourself professionally. So far we haven't had a single complaint of someone acting unprofessionally, although the media will say that teachers from this group or another group have been acting in unprofessional way. So we invite those complaints. So those are just the two comments that I wanted to make. I just want to check if there are any closing comments from the side of the table before I hand back. Let's go down the side, Mr. Kujan.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. But just to indicate, in terms of processes, as I've indicated earlier, that in terms of teacher development, per se, Harun, Ms. Mohammed has clarified the issue. It's around standards that was raised, and also the NIDRI report. We've got, if you deal with standards, general to have diagnostic assessment, which will determine the level in terms of the learner performance. We've got ANA, the Annual National Assessment, which is a tool that tells us what needs to be done from time to time. Grade 12 diagnosis assessments are done, which informs as well the areas to strengthen aspects of teacher development, maybe better learning area, you know, your grade 12 program. TIMS and PILS, your international instruments, are one of the standards that we use that make reports. All of those inform teacher development initiatives that needs to that we need to focus on. But critical, because this gives us an indication on what needs to be done. The NIDRI report, per se, will tell you, it's talking about two matters. Whether teachers can't or teachers won't. I'm just summarizing that NIDRI report by those two questions. Because it talks about issues of accountability. If you can read the recommendation, what is it that needs to be done? Two, if you say, as I said, it's either just with can't or want. In terms of can't, it's around issues of accountability. Want is around what intervention will be necessary to capacitate teachers. So we are looking to all into that major report in terms of responding to those two critical questions and the recommendations that they are coming up with. Hence, we are upscaling the teacher union collaborations. We are upscaling around the utilization of the teacher center so that beyond just us having workshops, how do we ensure that there's continuous teacher support at the local level? Hence the vehicle becomes the teacher center in terms of us taking all our programs through, whether it is about camps, the utilization of workbooks, you know, but it is all embedded into the intervention strategy that we need to take to take it forward. So I wanted just to respond generally about that aspect.
Thank you. Before, I think you have responded. Honorable members, there are still outstanding questions or follow-up questions that you... Yeah, let's actually follow up, and if there are new questions, just add to that.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, follow up on the building that has been purchased for 59 million and the one that has been that sold for 10.5 million. Chair, when I look at the establishment or yeah of says they are fully established,
They didn't say they've got vacancies. Or, yeah, in my understanding, there are no vacancies, there are no acting posts. Everybody is in the right position. And still, we've got, I went out to check because of his stress when I was listening to how the situation is with the building issues around Lendoga. It says they've got low budget, but they've got 49 million for a building. They sold their own building for 10 million. And I've got a problem in how they plan. The way they plan, I've got a problem there. I'm not sure, maybe I'm too sensitive or too much, I'm expecting too much from them, and yet there is none. And yeah, I just wanted to raise that in the point of the follow-up, and also in their cases, working with their cases, do they involve, when it is necessary, do they involve SAPS and justice? And also, do they have a record of how many cases, how many teachers who are being maybe expelled or are being suspended, and those that are suspended for how long, and all those things, Chair. Otherwise, I think we need also to involve all the other stakeholders when we call to say again to the select committee.
Yeah, in line with the last question, I would like to request Chairperson to provide us with a full report on the cases that they have ever dealt with. We want that report on the ethical conduct by teachers. And also, the strategy or plan on popularization of SAFE, you just touched on it. What I wanted to know is whether you have it or you don't have it.
Thank you. Honorable to be here.
Chairperson, I fully understand the explanation from the official of the Department of Basic Education, the connection with ANA and NIDA. That side I am fully informed on. Now my question was directly to SAIS, what role do they play in connection with what the Department of Basic Education is saying? Because my understanding is there is a problem, and there are a lot of problems in the Department of Basic Education. From their side, I want their response, and not from the Department of Basic Education. That thing we already discussed, and the explanation we got, and also the briefing we got from that department. Now the other one is also, I want to jump on the same thing, and I understand why my honorable member ran towards or is frustrated and maybe confused, because I'm also confused and frustrated. You said to me or to us this morning that you bought that building in the South East Street for 12 million, right? And you sold it on an auction for 10.5 million this year. So there's a loss. Now, my only understanding here is there was some kind of vandalism on the building, and I also understand the fluctuation on the property prices and so on. That I understand. So if that building was actually vandalized, where were you? Were you there inside that building, or what was the situation? Or couldn't you actually go to another place where the property from a very low price? That one I understand is inside Pretoria in the CBD. Is my understanding correct? So in the other areas the buildings will be less. So you don't need to have a building inside the CBD. If I am in SAIS, I will look for another building somewhere else. So our members of this organization is spread all over
there was around about 2 million rand plus in this building. And then the other one, is there some kind of binding clause into the contract between sales and the teacher in connection with the holding of the professionalism amongst teachers from your side? And I understand that the unions will and must defend their members also. That side I understand, because I was also a unionist. I was a vice chairperson of FATU in my area. So I will defend my members. Doesn't matter what actually happened. Now, from your side, that situation, can you force it onto the teacher? That is a contract, and you must actually adhere to that contract. And then the last question, chairperson, I don't want to go anymore. I will use another avenue to put some questions. I think it must to the Minister of Basic Education.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how many staff members? Because analyzing the situation here, staff members, employees, 11, 12, 16.7, it begins in 2008-09, 8.8 million, and then it rise 15.5 million, 19.2 million, 16.7 million, 22.8 million, 26.1 million, 28.1 million, and 30.1 million. Now, just inform us, how many members, staff members, do you have inside your organization? How many? And then we must find out if they do have that book, the annual target, not annual performance, the strategic one. Then through you, Honorable Chairperson, they must actually give us that booklet, that book, that is a very important one, through our committee secretary to you, so that we can get. Thank you. Sorry for the long delay.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine first as a follow-up on the question on discipline. I just want to find out, do you have powers to review previous adjudication and present a new recourse? I'm saying this, Chair, because look, and if the Chair says the council member or councillors and says are not permanent, they change them in 4 years. And the further question will be, how then do they deal with the legacy report of the previous council? That will go with dealing with these cases, the cases that are there. I just want to find out on these two things. And maybe to further ask Chair that, does the faith, is it not empowered by any legislation, your legislation, to decentralize your offices to provinces? Or do you have such offices in provinces that will be able to support you and feed the national says in Pretoria with information? Or do we have just one-stop office in Pretoria? And then the question will be, from what Honorable De Villa said, how then do you deal with the entire South African problem in all the provinces? The other question, Chair, which I find it very critical, if SAIS is an integrity body, but I want to check with SAIS that there is a research evidence that says that the education standard in South Africa lacks integrity. But what is your role there as a professional body to assist to make some kind of meaningful intervention in terms of making sure that when you deal with professionalized teachers, you must as well attempt to professionalize education as well? And the other one, my observation, Chair, that that SAIS is missing in action when it comes to, well, I look at it as a debate on making a teaching essential service. But if you deal with professionalism of teachers and education as well, what then is your contribution to this wild debate? It's there, small, but its intention is to want to correct the education system in South Africa, make it a very professional, because when they said essential, they said we want to professionalize education. What then is your role as a council to assist there? Last question is only your finding. It is the last in my list. The withdrawal of membership when teacher sits in a case, he's found guilty, then I just want to check whether if you withdraw the membership, your certificate of a teacher, do you withdraw the certificate permanently, or do you just suspend the certificate for a certain period when the teacher is found guilty of any whatever kind of misconduct that warrants you to relook into the license of a teacher to teach, whether you take it forever or you just suspend it for a few years and bring it back to a teacher? That's what I want to understand. I don't want to go into details, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Flaky. I think my last question, it will be, like you rightfully indicated and accepted that Satan has not been very visible in the provinces. And according to your current plan of 2011-2012, that this program, communication advocacy, but it lacks, it doesn't appear on your broader in your broader annual performance plan between 2011-2012 to 2015-2016. How do you ensure that the very same concern that you are having, if you don't, it doesn't feature or it doesn't, it's not part of your plan, how are you going to address that? And lastly, maybe on the issue of the building, I'm more interested because the council has been formed by 30 members. How many are full-time? Because it's a council.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just take a few questions first while the team prepares responses for the others, and start with your last one. We have 30 councillors, and of those councillors, I am the only one that is full-time as a CEO. The others are all there on a voluntary basis, and there's no remuneration for them other than the out-of-pocket expenses, travel and so on. The question of the building and the staff, the CFO will come to. When we strike off members, we have different categories. Some members are struck off permanently. In other words, they'll never see us inside of a classroom again because of them being serial pedophiles and things like that. And many countries in the world check with us before they employ teachers. Then there are others that are struck off for a particular period where they could reapply to SAIS, and SAIS will have a hearing to check their fitness to teach. They have to convince SAIS that they are now rehabilitated or corrected, so that SAIS will consider that. Then there's a third type where their striking off is suspended. In other words, they don't go off the roll, but if they repeat a similar offense, then they automatically strike off. So these are the three kinds of striking off that the council use. The question of the councils coming in year in after every 4 years has posed no particular problem, but it does slow down the work of council. Maybe that's the only challenge I could think of, in the sense that the new council takes time to get to grips with what the old council has been doing and to try to understand the philosophy of the old council. And sometimes there are some hiccups, like the question of the building. One council took the decision to buy that building in Sasaki Street for reasons that the council felt fit. They had a research team, they went out, they studied that. The staff had very little to do with it. Council appoints its own committees that staff members like us, a company, they did research and they decided to buy the road. This present council found that to be a poor decision because of the suitability of that building, the location of it, and the condition of that building. So the new council decided, no, this is not a professional enough building per se, and the cost of refurbishment seemed to be excessive, so they felt that that building must be sold. The CFO will give you more details about why we sold it for less and not more. And then we got our new building. So the council sometimes reviews, like any structure, its previous decision. It has the power to rescind and review in a democratic way decisions. But it doesn't do much of that. Very rare. That could have been one of the few cases where it goes back and changes a decision. Most of the time, the council abides by the decisions. It has never happened that council goes back and changes a decision of sanction on a teacher. That hasn't happened. And it may not even be legal if such a situation arises to go and change a decision. Unless, of course, there is a new case against the teacher. So that is the question about the powers of the council and the changing of the council and what difficulties it poses. The question of a contract between the teacher and SAFE, yes. When the teacher, this was a very fundamental decision that was taken years ago when SAFE was formulated, that a teacher must sign to take up a membership of SAFE, to become a SAFE member, to register with SAFE. A teacher must physically sign. Previously, there was a small teaching council and in this country for one particular group of people, and they were automatically registered. This new council, which takes all teachers into account, insisted that every teacher signs. Now, what is the point there is that when every teacher signs, they're signing a contract to abide by the code of ethics, to abide by the decisions of council. And if they don't adhere to the decisions of council or to its code of ethics, and they make false declarations, for example, regarding their qualifications, they are in trouble. They can actually be charged by SAFE, and in an extreme case, they can be referred to the police as well, the South African Police Services, if they are defrauding the case. So that is the one or two points that I wanted to make. The last point I want to make before I hand over to my colleagues is, yes, we will furnish this committee with the relevant documentation that you would want to see. We want to give you a full report on the ethics cases, no problem. As soon as we get to the office, we want to give you a strategic plan, some from the last few years and the years ahead. The CEO will have no problem to send it to you. And the last point I want to make is the question of outreach. Ma'am, your question is a good one. Why is it not in the program? Now that is, as the CFO will tell you, is we know we are going to get money. But until we are guaranteed of the money that we are going to get, we cannot show activities planned for that. That is why the outreach is missing there. But as the CFO said earlier, is that now we are sure of getting the budget that we were looking for all along because of the financial situation changing, the department's money coming in, the building being sold. So we do have a full outreach communications department that technically we didn't project. But what we'll do, Madam Chair, is that we will submit to you the full outreach plan for the coming years in terms of the new budget, because that is very critical, the outreach. And that was one area that we would have had to sacrifice, and I would have had to go to the minister to declare that to her if the budget situation didn't come right. Thank you very much. Let me just check from this side if there are any comments on any topic here. Chairperson?
No, well, you have said a mouthful in terms of the annual reports that speak to how we have been audited, for instance, strategic plans and what has been happening in sales. But that regarding even the cases that we handle, that one of those challenges would be witnesses withdrawing from the cases themselves. That's lack of evidence, what the COO spoke to earlier on. These other cases of reviewing and what have you. You have also touched on that. And let's allow Maurice to speak more on the building. But let's say on record that the new council, when it came in, here is a building that was bought at 12 million, and the renovation was far above that, 3-4 times more than that. And the new council said, no, it can't be. Thanks.
No, thank you, Chair.
Let me explain again the issue of the building. It's just that we use the one-way building. Let me add another, whether I call it prefix, dilapidated building as the building to be purchased. So the building in Fisake was a dilapidated building, was an old building, leaking roof, lot of things. We had to redo, restructure the building. So the plan we had was to restructure the entire building to be able to be used. Nobody would walk into that building and use it, the stage at which we bought it. Resources dictated at that time that you wouldn't get a building in Pretoria for 12 million which you can house an office. Wouldn't get that. But the council at that time was of the view that let's buy this one. We bought land. We have the structure which will improve. So the improvement plan was there. There, when the parliament raised a concern, at that time, portfolio committee was chaired by Ms. Chauhan. That was the worst interaction we had since I started working for the council about that building. And it was clear that building was not accepted. The improvement plan was not accepted. It was going at 49 million, the improvement, in addition to 12 at that time. And with the understanding that with the construction, there are a lot of unknown costs which you can incur along the way. With that interaction, it was clear that that building, the council must sit down and look at it again. As the chair has indicated, they sat down after this pressure to reconsider this matter. Really, they found it to say no. It may not be a cost-effective exercise if we renovate this building and move on. We don't know the unknown defects which are in that structure. Maybe while you are just breaking there, just to reconstruct, something breaks to be, which threatens the structure to last longer. Then the council took a decision to say, no, why can't we get a new building which will have its own structure, which will match the council needs from the construction, rather than to go and try to fit in something which we don't know what is it that we're going to come across. They took a decision to say, let's sell that building, while at the same time we look for an alternative solution. And throughout that process, let me try to indicate, it took the council so many few years to come to that conclusion of that building. As I've indicated, from 2009, that building was in the market, and they started with the exercise of getting that building. And as we always come twice a year to the portfolio committee, all our presentations were open to indicate the process the council has reached in regard with the accommodation. Because you would find that we, in our budget, the accommodation is still a problem. Whether we report or we come to present the plan, there was always something about the accommodation. And we had to update them. How far are we? How have we moved towards that? Update the ministry, update the portfolio committee. So the processes were intensive, and it was not short. It's only that when we present now, we're looking at the time and trying to take a shortcut, which results in a lot of more questions really to arise, which is a fair deal. But the process is still, it's a public process. Now, once we get our money, we see that we can afford it. In terms of the legislation, we have to get approval from Treasury. So it will be still a transparent process. we still report to the structures which are relevant structures. If we have to come and report to you, we'll come and report, but I believe you have taken note that the lack of interaction leaves a gap. So as we come and report, we'll update you in terms of the processes, how far are we. But since that time, I'm telling you, the process is taking into account the public concerns from day one when they raise the concern. So all the processes are intact. In terms of how many staff, we are currently 73 in the new building. But in terms of, I think when you raise your concern, you referred to the salary bill going up. You see, we talk of professional development as something which is coming in now. It was there before. But the reshaping, taking into account the continuous professional development, up to today, we have a skeletal staff to operate now. But as we unfold it, my colleague here indicated that we'll appoint a team to run in provinces. It's a growing unit within organizations, so we have to take care of the growth which will take place in that unit, because if it doesn't grow, we won't implement this CBTD. It will have to grow. So what will happen in terms of the budget? I see if for this year we don't make a very big change, it won't come to that 26 million that you see there. It will just come to that 22 plus the inflation, the salary increase, which won't go beyond the 24. So, but should the need arise, which the team is monitoring very closely to see what challenges do we come across while trying to implement. Although we can project, but there are a lot of the unknowns which they will come across, which they may need to resolve that unit. No, thank you.
Thank you. Delegation from CISA, I've been listening. That is something, you know, for other questions, if I'm going to allow for you to respond to other questions, really you'll be opening can of worms. I must indicate that we are a select committee. We are a select committee of the NCOP, which is the other house of the parliament. As a select committee, we don't deal with one department. We deal with five departments. So obviously our interaction with you will be limited. But rest assured that when you come here, you must come being prepared, because we are representing provinces. We are not talking at the national, we are talking at provinces of issues that are happening on the ground. That is the reality. But I must maybe register my concern when you said this is parliament, this parliamentary committee, when you came to present here, you made shortcuts. And I think as this select committee, we are going to call you back, because you have to account. We are public representatives. The other thing that I must indicate, as this select committee, maybe the other committee didn't have an opportunity to see, but because we interact and will interact with your presentation, that you have tabled a set plan for 2011-2012, which is not even signed to this select committee. On that note, honorable members, we appreciate, but definitely before the end of this term, we are going to call you so that you come here. When we say we want an annual report, we want annual report together with your stress plan, you know, because we must be in a position so that we monitor that the budget that you have been given, are you delivering? Do we get value for the budget that we have been given? This is our main responsibility as public representatives, and I'm happy that at least we have interacted, but I'm going to request that this is a parliamentary committee,
we request to be taken serious. On that note, we are going to call you again. On that note, honorable members, let me take this opportunity to thank everybody, and the meeting is adjourned.
Okay.
Let me excuse.
Yes.
No, let me just interrupt. Honorable members, let me just indicate that we are four provinces here. We're supposed to be five. On that note, we won't proceed with the next item.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so
thank you.
Oh, I've got
Thank you.